Blog Talk Radio.
Live every Wednesday, your Voice of Indie hosts, Beam Weeks and Stephen G, welcome authors, musicians, publishing industry pros, artists, and assorted creative guests for an exciting interactive hour. Call in during the show or post questions and comments on Twitter for responses in real time. Meet your favorite indie creators. Learn inside tips, network, and promote your work. At Voice of Indie, you can spend time with guests such as Country Music Hall of Fame drummer Mark Herndon, sci-fi master Robert G. Wilscroft, med expert Dr. Helen Burrell, the Tippins of Rocker's Wide Track, sports writer and photographer Stephen Hargis, broadcaster and author David Carroll, and international author Sally Cronin. The link for each week's show is pinned on Twitter atop at Voice of Indie, and you can receive the link every Wednesday morning in your inbox by subscribing to our newsletter at freshinkgroup.com. Check out Voice of Indie every Wednesday on Blog Talk Radio and catch hundreds of episodes archived everywhere from our website to our YouTube channel and Spotify.
It's time for Voice of Indie. Your hosts today are Beam Weeks, author, producer, and marketing monster for independent multimedia publisher Fresh Ink Group, and Stephen Gies, author, producer, composer, and publisher for Fresh Ink Group.
Happy hump day, everybody. Welcome to another episode. It's another week and another episode of the Voice of Indie podcast. This is episode number 115. And I am your host, Stephen Weeks, and with me is the yikes man himself, Stephen Gies. How you doing tonight, Stephen?
Yikes, yikes, yikes. You said hump day, and I'm thinking, Mike. I wonder how long that'll be a cultural reference.
Yeah.
I'll bet you just about everybody listening understood it as well.
Yeah,
I'm doing fine. Went to Nashville yesterday, and Craig Boyack had urged me to try some pumpkin beer, so I found a place in Nashville that sells pumpkin beer, brought some pumpkin beer back, went and saw the band Yes, celebrating the 50th anniversary of their album Close to the Edge. So I got to feel like I was 14 years old again for a while last night at Ryman Auditorium. It was pretty cool.
Wow. Ryman, what a classic facility.
Yeah.
Now, the pumpkin beer, have you tried it yet?
No. Bought a 4-pack, put it in the fridge. It's waiting for me. I figure maybe this weekend.
I like beer. I've just never had pumpkin beer. Just, I don't know. Some flavors, they got chocolate beer now. And I don't get it, but that's, you know, some people seem to like it.
Ew.
All right. We're going to go over to Twitter here real quick. Verwayne Greenhoe has a update on his Vela. It says, check out my murder investigation story in the marsh. You can find the ebook paperback here, and there's a link. So get over to Twitter, hashtag Fresh Ink Group, and click on latest, and you'll find this. You can click on that and grab a hold of it. And the Vela version is at another place. So go over there and check that out. And I see Joe Congel's already hollering out to tonight's guest. Looking forward to Linda Pirtle tonight. Should be a great show. Thank you, Joe. Always good to have you in the audience. And if you want to be part of this, we've got callers already lined up. If you want to be a caller, call in and talk to tonight's guest, or you want to leave a comment or a question on Twitter. Here's how you can do all of that stuff.
Call 516-453-9902 right now with your questions or comments for tonight's guest, or post a note on Twitter with hashtag Fresh Ink Group in the body of the tweet, and we'll read it on air. That's 516-453-9902 or hashtag Fresh Ink Group on Twitter.
All right. Now, A.K. Wingler, Fresh Ink Group member author, she's the one working on the food truck series. She's got a website now, yourfoodtruckhowto.com, which we put together for her. Her book, How to Start and Run Your Own Food Truck Business in Florida, is out and selling like gangbusters. Not that I would ever use a cliche. And
that's what all the kids are saying these days, right?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. And her How to Start and Run Your Own Food Truck Business in Georgia is now out and in full distribution. So get out there and order your copy on that one. There's a new video for that one up on YouTube. And we are working hard on the How to Start and Run Your Own Food Truck Business in Tennessee book. And we're looking to have that thing out in about 3 or 4 weeks as well. And there's already a video for that one over on YouTube as well. So these food trucks are food truck books, food truck guides are really starting to take off. The one that just came out, Georgia, it's been out, I think, about a week now, something like that, made number 3 in the print bestsellers of Fresh Ink Group. Ooh. This week. So those books are moving. Of course, nothing's knocking the big gorilla off that 1 and 2 spot yet, but we'll talk about that in a minute.
Yeah, those are some big doings there. Audiobook update, Mad Max and Sweet Sarah by Ellie Collins. The audiobook has been finished. I put the reread lines in there and sent the files to Mom Collins, Stephanie Collins, Ellie's mother, and she will go through them and listen to them. And if they pass the mom test, we'll be putting them up and they'll be available in a short bit of time. And if you want to know when they're available and how you can get your copy, because these are really cool books, subscribe to our newsletter. And here's how you can do that.
Stay on top of these podcasts and all things Fresh Ink Group with our weekly digital newsletter, new releases, videos, stories, excerpts, interviews, and more. Sign up now on the homepage of FreshInkGroup.com and be the one who knows what's what.
Hey.
It's official now.
Yeah. So let's take a look at what's going on with the print bestsellers out of Fresh Ink Group's catalog and backlist. Right now we've got Practical Problems, 10 Stories for the Stage by J. Ash Looney is in the 5th slot. That's a book of 10 single-act plays. They read like stories, or you can read them like plays, and they're great for putting on little community groups or different organizations or whatever. And he's even designed it so it can be used for, like, fundraising for organizations. Practical Problems, 10 Stories for the Stage. Check that out. There's a video about it on YouTube in the Fresh Ink Group channel where we hope that you would subscribe when you stop by there. In the number 4 slot, I know this is an obscure title. Nobody's ever heard of this one before. The High Road, Memories from a Long Trip by Country Music Hall of Fame drummer Mark Herndon, who played with the supergroup Alabama for almost 3 decades. His memoir, where he talks about growing up, wanting to be a professional musician, and wanting to be a pilot, both of which he accomplished in spectacular manner. And then it tells about all those years that he was with Alabama. And it's just a fascinating book, especially if you like all the behind-the-scenes stories, meeting the famous stars, and hearing what that life on the road was like. Number 3, How to Start and Run Your Own Food Truck Business in Georgia by A.K. Wingler, the second book in the series. Florida was the first. Tennessee's going to be the third. The food truck series is starting to roll out. How to Start and Run Your Own Food Truck Business in Georgia. Now, that brings us to number 1 and 2, and this month's big gorilla. Submariner, 30 Years of Hijinks and Keeping the Fleet Afloat is in the number 1 and 2 slots. I can't tell which is the hardcover and which is the softcover, but one of them is outselling the other about 2 to 1. My guess is it's probably the softcovers are the better seller, but you never know. But anyway, congratulations to Jerry Pate and Robert G. Willis-Croft, who helped him compile and put all that together. That book hit in its own genre category number 1. On Amazon last week, became an Amazon number 1 bestseller, and that has carried through now for 2 weeks in a row. It's still carrying that number 1 slot, and it's in the number 1 slot in Fresh Ink Group's print sales as well. Congratulations, everybody.
Congratulations, yeah. And another update on the other audiobook I've been working on, Jenny Wong's Girl Wears Those Shoes. I got the last files for the last chapter, and I was working on it a little bit today. I'm hoping to have that done by this weekend, and once that's done, again, check out the newsletter. You'll find out where you can get it, and if you want to know what that book's about, go to our archive. Jenny was a guest on the show here some time ago, and a few months back, and her show and every other show that we do is in that archive, and here's how you can find the archive.
Find your favorite show in the Voice of Indie Archive on YouTube at Fresh Ink Group, StephenGees.com, beamweeks.com, freshinkgroup.com, and on Spotify. And now, you can listen on iHeartRadio, Google Podcasts, and TuneIn. Just search The Voice of Indy, all one word.
All right. So, we're going to hit
who you got this week?
We're gonna go to the guest, or are we going to hit a commercial before we go on?
Yeah, let's go to the guest. We got callers waiting.
Yeah, we do. All right. So Linda Pirtle is a retired educator who taught the art of writing and understanding literature for years as an English teacher. Linda Pirtle's cozy mystery series, The Games We Play, features the lady next door and includes four novels. Book one, The Mahjong Murders, earned a 5-star Reader's Favorite Award. Cool. Book two, yeah. Deadly Dominoes, Best Cozy Mystery Texas Authors, 2018. Book three, Tarot Terrors, Best Cozy Mystery Texas Authors, 2019. I'm catching a theme here. And book four, Scrabble Secrets, 2020. The Christian series reveals how people bent on evil can ruin a game. Linda lives in Fort Worth, Texas, with her husband and former guest of this show, Caleb Pirtle III, and their standard poodle named Piper. Welcome to the show, Linda Pirtle. We are glad to have you here.
Hi, Linda.
Thank you. Hi, guys. I'm really happy to be on your show. It's such an honor.
Well, it's an honor for us with all those awards you've racked up.
Yeah, we've been looking forward to having you.
Yeah.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much. I enjoyed writing my series. I never thought I'd be an author. So it really surprised me when someone bought one of my books.
I'll let you know if anybody ever buys one of mine.
Okay.
But Linda, since we've got callers waiting, we're going to get to the phones pretty quickly. Before we do that, why don't you tell us real quickly, how did you get into the writing? I mean, what's the backstory here that kind of got you to where you are now?
Okay, I tend to be verbose, but I'll make this very short. My husband, Caleb Pirtle, dared me to write a book.
Ah.
And so I did. And while I was writing it, my next-door neighbor was going through a rough time. And I would take her walking every day. And I would make up a story to tell her. And it was always about her stepchildren. We were just killing them right and left in my story. And it was cathartic for her. But I didn't write anything. I didn't write any of that down. And so that's really how I started writing.
Oh. Sounds like even a potential story in there about a person who tells stories to a person that
Yeah, I'm a big
day
liar.
Like that.
You know, I lie all the time.
Yeah.
you never let the truth interfere with a good story.
That's what the good authors do. We know how to lie.
We know all how right, to elaborate.
So, Beam, why don't we go ahead and roll one, and then we'll open the phones.
All righty. This one's the short version. So
come join the fun, make comments, ask questions. We hope to see you at Meet the Author Podcast Live every Wednesday night at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. Find all the program links at indiebooksource.com.
Meet the Author. All right. Do you want to do bring Helen in, Dr. Helen, first?
Yeah, let's do a quick hello. Let her tell everybody
Alrighty.
How she's doing.
Hello, Dr. Helen.
Me? You're talking to me?
We're talking to you. How you doing?
Okay.
Tell everybody what the latest...
The news
update.
I have today for you guys, which you may have heard of. You know my father's cousin, Arthur Miller?
Yeah, playwright.
Yeah. Right. Well, guess what? This is a wonderful thing. His daughter gave permission for them to revive it after 75 years with an all-African-American cast.
Revive
which
what?
One?
A particular play?
Death of a Salesman.
Death of a Salesman. Oh,
okay.
Fantastic.
Isn't that terrific?
Oh, that is cool.
So it's playing down at the Hudson Theater on West 46th Street through January 15th. And except for some slight additions, it's true to the original story, you know, and it's universal.
Yeah, that's a great story.
Yeah, definitely.
So I thought you might want to know that. I think some people in your group may have heard of it because it's in the news.
I think most people know Arthur Miller. You have any update on your health for the listeners?
Yeah, it's I can walk better. But there's still, you know, it's still not perfect. And I don't know, I'd like to get out of here. But, you know, if you ever needed characters, they're all here.
Make notes. Make notes.
And I've diagnosed, too, that I've been a roommate of a narcissistic personality disorder. And all of a sudden I realized this guy that's following me around who's very hostile, he's a borderline. You know, you could be brilliant but have a very immature psyche. You could have a brilliant intellect. So this guy has a PhD, but he's very, very immature, and he's very dangerous. That's a dangerous type of character. But anyway, it's not a mild place to be in. And by the way, for Halloween, you take a bunch of pictures of all these people in the wheelchairs sitting there, non-compos mentis. That's scary.
I'll bet. Well, we're glad to hear that you're doing better, Helen, and you're going to be able to stick around and listen to the rest of the show, right?
Oh, absolutely. I'm very happy to.
All right.
But
well,
I recommend Death of a Salesman in whatever form it is given, because it's really a great classic.
Yes, it is.
Yeah. Cool. All right. Thanks,
thanks
Helen.
Thanks for calling, Helen.
Okay. I'm going to listen and congratulate.
Okay.
Yeah,
all right,
her uncle was Arthur Miller.
Yeah, I forgot about that, too. All right, so we're going to go to the first caller here, and this is going to be area code 214. Area code 214, welcome to the show. You are on the air. What is your name, and where are you calling from? Hello.
Hi, is this me?
Yes, that's you.
Well, good. Yeah, I just wanted to tell you to beware of that woman. Because if you make Linda mad, she will kill you in her next book and use your real name.
And your stepchildren, too.
Well, I've already killed Bill, my husband, in one of the books. So, you know.
Yeah, I've already bit the dust.
I gather we're listening to popular author Caleb Pirtle III, wife of today's guest.
Yes, we are.
you are, and we listen to you on a regular basis. It's kind of a Wednesday night staple for us.
We appreciate that.
We are honored.
Well, you can hear the children in the background. He's at a game.
Okay.
I had my high school reunion this past weekend, and it's the first one I attended without Caleb. But he chose to attend our grandchildren's games, which is okay.
You can't beat that.
Beat that.
No.
That's building memories for your grandkids.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And that time passes quickly.
Yes, it does.
Next thing you know, they're wanting to borrow money.
Oh, they already
indeed
are.
Oh, they already are.
I have them. They have to earn their money around our house. They're painting my fence now. It's just like Huckleberry Finn out there.
Huckleberry.
Red hair, freckles, and all.
Fantastic.
So, Caleb, when she's heavily into writing one of her books, is she absorbed by it, or is she just kind of treat it lightly or whatever? I mean, does it get intense around your place?
Well, as I said, the difference between Linda and me, yes, I write every day. She writes on Wednesdays.
Huh.
And I did today. I wrote some.
And
today.
You did today. And she's just published one new book of Magnolia Bluff Crime Chronicles and got another one halfway finished. So she started to get the hang of this thing and ran off and leaving me.
Reason I have one halfway finished is because once a year I go away for a week. I pretend I'm Caleb Pirtle, and I don't cook. I don't do laundry. I sit at my computer and type and write.
Feels good, doesn't it?
It does, and I could get so much done with no one coming in and saying, what's for dinner?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, thank you. We're proud of you. And I know you've got other people that want to talk. So we'll see you after the game.
Yeah, thanks for calling in, Caleb.
Well, thanks for calling, Caleb.
You bet.
Thanks, Caleb.
All right. Wait till that goes on to hold, and we're going to go over here to this caller, and this is area code 832. Welcome to the show. What's your name and where are you calling from?
Hi. My name is Janie, and I am calling from Frisco, Texas, and I know Linda Pardle personally, and I, too, was at the reunion this weekend, so we had a great time. But I did want to ask, and I've never had a chance to ask her. As she's writing, when she begins to write, she probably has in mind where the story is going to be leading, what maybe who the culprit will be, the protagonist will be. But as the story develops, do you make major changes because it's just not sitting, or maybe you were inspired by something else that caused that change to happen?
Oh, yes. In fact, the book that's coming out this month, I was really struggling with one chapter, and it finally dawned on me that I needed to switch the beginning of that chapter so that it would flow from the previous chapter. So I rearranged one whole chapter. I mean, I would just highlight pages and move it where it would fit the best.
You ask about when I start writing, do I have a character in mind? It was easy with the series, the games we play, because the main character was in all of those.
Right.
Lillian.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But when I add other characters to the story, I sit down. It's almost as though I'm interviewing that character. Mm-hmm. I want to know how they look, how they dress. What they like to do for recreation, what they, you know, their pet peeve, what it might be, and the goal for that book. And always, what do I want that character to learn as a result of the experiences he or she has in the story?
Yep. How you want them to change.
Yeah.
Somebody has to change, has to know something they didn't understand before.
That's always taught my students to do. Mm-hmm. You know, at the beginning of the year, English teachers want students to write a biography. And so I always tell my students, I don't want to know when you were born. I know when you were born, you're in this grade level, so I have a pretty good idea. I know that you went to kindergarten because you're in this grade level. You couldn't have been in this grade level if you hadn't gone through all those other grades. I want you to think of one event in your life, an experience that you had, or a person that you met that caused you to change your mind or affected you in some way. And that's true for people who are just trying to begin writing. That's a good way to start.
Yeah, it's interesting that you did that in an English class. When I was in high school, I took a psychology class, and the psych teacher in there had us do that, write about that there's a certain event that changed your outlook in life or changed something about you.
Mm-hmm.
And it was amazing listening to some of these stories. Some of them were heartbreaking. Some of them were cathartic for the people reading them, and just quite interesting.
Well, sometimes you learn things you don't want to know. But one student wrote an essay, and I'll never forget it, and I won't mention her name. If she's listening in, that's okay, because I'm going to brag on her. She wrote about the fact that she had an aunt who was in the state home for people who are disabled and various disabilities. But her mother went to see her sister every month, and she would make this little girl go with her. And she was so embarrassed, and she felt so out of place because all of the those in the wheelchairs, everybody would come. They just loved to have a child enter that facility.
Wow.
And so she was ashamed of her aunt until she was about, in sixth grade, and they happened to enter her aunt's room, her aunt was balancing her checkbook. And it dawned on my student that my aunt can do something I have no idea about. And so she, after that, started appreciating the things that her aunt could do. She majored in education and works with special ed students.
Wow.
So that one moment changed her life.
Clarity.
Mm-hmm. And having the ability to write it down was the turning point for her. She could see herself making those changes.
Exactly.
Her perspective of it all changed from seeing that. Yeah, I want to ask you concerning changes. Because of the number of years that you taught, did you see, as the years progressed, did you see the kiddos changing in so that they could open up more, or would they become more private, or were they very similar? The years didn't matter. They were similar, whether it was 10 or 15 years ago or the present time, towards the time you retired. Did you see much change in the child being able to open up to you?
Well, you know, back when we were in school, we just didn't talk about things like that, family problems or what have you. Actually, I don't think we had a counselor on our campus. But today, I think they're a little more open, but it really depends upon the rapport that you build with those students and how well you get to know them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I know the first day of class, I would always have them write down what they would consider to be the ideal teacher. In other words, they were setting my goals, their expectations of me. And while they were doing that, I was writing down my expectations of excellent students. And then when everybody finished, we would compare notes, and it was amazing. What they said they wanted from a teacher is what I had planned to do anyway. So that opened the door for them to have faith in me as a person.
Well,
they gave them the ownership in that class.
Yeah.
They must have been very much, were these AP students, were they GT students? I mean, I just can't imagine an 11th, 12th grade student feeling comfortable in sharing things that maybe the family considers private.
Well, that depends. I taught at both public school and private school. And to be honest, they were all the same.
Oh.
A 17-year-old is a 17-year-old. It's a little kid in a big body.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And you just have to realize that. But when I became an administrator, because I had built up that rapport with those students for 4 years, they came to me with everything.
I know that was a true benefit for them, is feeling comfortable to do that.
Well, they were just good kids, you know. Good kids don't make the news all the time.
Yeah.
But they're pretty good.
They are there. Linda, thank you for being who you are and for sharing so much of what you've experienced. And what you're doing.
Well,
now, what is the name of the book
you're working
on right now?
Right now I'm working on a book that's going to be published in 2023. And my Magnolia Bluff books always have the title somewhere, the word dilemma. The one that's coming out is the Dewey Decimal Dilemma. I'm taking the same protagonist, and I move, who happens to be the town librarian, who knows what everybody reads. You really can get an insight into people if you look at what they read. And she knows everything. So the book I'm working on right now is The Round Table Dilemma. She has a close group of friends, and they are the female sleuths in this small city in the hill country of Texas, Magnolia Bluff. One of their friends has been kidnapped, and they are going to have a lot of capers, a lot of escapades, trying to find the location of their friend,
Caroline, who is the protagonist, was keeping her friend's poodle, and the poodle was stolen. So they've got to track down the poodle because they overheard a conversation that the dog nappers want some information from their friend, and she won't talk to him until they go get her dog.
There you go.
So,
yeah.
Yeah.
Totally.
And so they plan a trip to Austin, buy all of this black attire, black mask, black clothes, black shoes, and they are looking for clues, and they break into their friend's house to see if she's left any clues. But on their way back, put gasoline in the car, and they drive off with the nozzle in their still attached to the car. And one of the women says to the other, well, we can't break in anything. We can't even fill gasoline in the car without making a mess. So, there are those lines like that that keep coming up. And they visit the spa. And, of course, none of them like to exercise. And they call her the health guru. And she talks about the healthy diet and everything they're supposed to be eating and all the exercise they're supposed to do. And they just can't take it one more day. They sneak out and go to Whataburger.
There you go.
And if they're leaving,
only in Texas, right.
The health nut to get her burger, too. So they've got that thing held over her head.
Well, I know it'll be just as charming as the Cozy Mystery Series has been. Thank you, Linda. I appreciate it.
Thank you for calling.
Hey, Janie, was the reunion fun? I know the 10-year is a big one.
Yeah, 10 years.
It was amazing. And I think the thing that made it so amazing would have to be the fact that we had so many people there, and we had people from Las Vegas, from Alaska, and from Minnesota. I mean, these people came with genuine desire to reconnect, and you realize that, and you look around the room, and yes, we're aging, but no, I still see the 18-year-old child in that person. So it's a real blessing to be able to experience a class reunion like what we had in Kilgore, Texas.
So to paraphrase,
it's a very diverse group.
To paraphrase Linda, then, it's like a bunch of kids in wrinkled bodies.
Yeah.
And we didn't set up the ironing board to make
use that line, I think.
Yeah. In wrinkled bodies.
Oh,
we all looked good though. We all looked, and we laughed a lot. So it was a very positive weekend.
Oh, that's cool. And I'm pretty sure you have to have a passport to come all the way from Minnesota. So that person really put in the effort.
No doubt.
You know, he kept fanning himself the whole time he was down here. He was so hot.
So
yeah.
Thanks again.
Thanks for calling
in,
Janie.
Thank you, Janie.
You're welcome. Goodbye. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Linda, right. I hear you mentioned Hill Country, and the lady, Ann Stewart, from the Dallas-Fort Worth area, who used to run Fresh Ink Group for us for about 15 years until she passed away. Every year, she and her husband went to Hill Country down there and sent me pictures of the bluebonnets. That was her thing every year.
It is beautiful, and the 9 authors that we call ourselves the underground authors, that area actually, it's a beautiful area. And has a wonderful history. But have you ever heard of herding cats?
Yeah.
Well, yeah. You try to get 9 authors on one project. All 9 of them are leaders, very talented people, no followers in the group. We really had fun having Zoom calls with each other to determine where we would have our setting, what the name would be. We even drew maps of the city, the layout, so we could all get a visual picture of it. Then we decided the due date. How long will it take the first person to get the first book out? And so we assigned dates,
We developed, each author developed his or her characters, as I had described earlier, physical characteristics, all of that about their characters, professions, and we shared that with each other. We had a pact that we would not kill each other's main characters. So it has been, I guess, one of the most fun projects I've ever participated in.
Sounds like it.
Yeah, that's an interesting project there. I remember when Caleb was talking about it. It's just an interesting project.
Yeah.
Well, and everybody wrote in different genres, but as it really turned out, I think they're all pretty much cozy mysteries.
Cozy mystery.
Now, you know what the definition of a cozy mystery is.
Let's hear it.
It's a gentle mystery. The murder occurs, but it's not graphic.
Yeah, it's not violent.
It's not violent. It's gentle. And when I first started writing and researching cozy mysteries, I thought, wait a minute. Murder is murder.
The Gentle Murder.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would be a good title. It really would.
Yeah, but there's a big difference between chainsaws and subtle poisonings.
Oh, yes. And have you seen that commercial on TV where this group of kids in the dark of night run and hide behind a bunch of chainsaws?
Chainsaws.
Yeah. Why can't we get in this running car?
The running car, just go. Are you crazy? Let's go hide behind the chainsaw.
But the one reason I like, I did a lot of research before I started writing a cozy mystery. Amazon has over 400 pages of cozy mysteries.
Wow.
And for the aspiring author, that's going to tell you one of two things. One, there's going to be a lot of competition. And number two, people like cozy mysteries.
Yeah. When you see a lot of competition, it usually means there's a lot of space.
Uh-huh. That's right.
Mm-hmm. You got to find your spot in that space. Make your noise.
Find what's unique that nobody else is doing, which is what I did with the games we play. The first book, The Mahjong Murders, a group of little women in a gated community have a really difficult time sitting down to play because they're interrupted all the time. And one of the ladies in the group is murdered. And then the second book is Deadly Dominoes. A group of campers play dominoes, and it gets really involved because it has the deep state in it, and a group of militia people trying to subvert the Keystone Pipeline that's coming through that area. We have really good friends who live in a very isolated wooded area, and that pipeline came right through their property, so they weren't very happy about that.
I'll bet.
How about we got some comments here on Twitter. How about we take a few of these comments, because I think there's even a question. There's even a question for you over here. I'll take the first one, Stephen. You can take the next one. The first one, it's a comment from Verwayne Greenhoe. He says, I never use an alarm, but I know when it's time to get up on Wednesdays when I see the Fresh Ink Group email. All right. Promoting that newsletter.
Verwayne Greenhoe just shouted out, hi, Dr. Helen. I worked in an ER and in a psych ward of a prison. And you're right. Those places are full of characters. Yes, they are. No question. And then you got a question from Joe.
Yeah. Joe has a question for you, Linda. He says, hi, Linda. What's been more of a challenge to write and why? The Games We Play series or your upcoming Magnolia Bluff Crime Chronicles book, The Dewey Decimal Dilemma?
You know, I think the most difficult and probably the most fun has been the upcoming Magnolia Bluff Crime Chronicle book, simply because I had to be conscious of the other authors and their characters. And I did not want to overstep my
I wanted to use, and I finally ended up using some characters longer in the book than others, but to try to work in everyone's character, that was a challenge.
I can imagine.
But a fun challenge.
All right.
I'm sorry.
I can imagine that would be kind of difficult, trying to figure out, okay, which ones do you want to use and how long are you going to use them and in what context? And these are other people's characters, so you want to keep that in mind that, you know.
When I first wrote about the coffee shop owner, the really good wood-fired coffee shop, that's C.W. Hall's character. And that was the first character other than Caleb's character that I had used in my book. And I sent those pages to him to make sure that I was being true to his character. And then Cindy Davis, who wrote The Great Peanut Butter Conspiracy, she has a young lady in her story that is psychic. Medium, and I wanted to use her, even though Cindy's book came out before mine, and this young girl named Bliss had already left Magnolia Bluff to go on her way someplace else. I wanted to let her appear in a paranormal atmosphere. So, you know, that was a challenge to bring that character back and have a purpose, be there. And then Kelly Marshall, who lives out in Seattle, her character is a wildlife officer, forest, you know, works with the wildlife division. And how in the world could I get her in there? But I did. It was a brief moment, but I did. And go ahead.
Do you find working on these kinds of projects that in the end it maybe makes you a better writer?
Definitely.
More complete writer?
Definitely, because of all of the people in this group, I'm probably the novice. And so I had to work really hard not to embarrass them. I did not want them to be ashamed of that one book, you know, in the series. Mm. They set a high, you know, a high mark for excellence. Jinx Schwartz is a USA Today best-selling author, and she's one of the underground authors in our group. And she came in late. Her book comes out in December, and I'm really anxious to see it. I haven't seen any of the pages yet, but the title I like.
What's the title?
Texas Born, Texas Born, Texas Bred.
Texas Born, Texas
Bred. Got some good keywords in there.
Uh-huh.
I'm just picturing... Like when you get a bunch of youth sports parents all, you know, arguing over whose kid's getting the most playing time, whose character's getting the most pages. You got three more paragraphs than my character got. Oh, no.
That's not
like,
fair.
Yeah, my character got killed off. Boy, that's put a frost on the reunion.
You know, that would make a great blog.
Yeah.
Let the characters argue with each other. Hey, you got an idea.
We've done some similar things to that before. Like one of the common things we've been involved with other bloggers is doing like mock interviews where you, somebody interviews mm-hmm. your character. And then your character, mm-hmm. you get to know more about that character than what's in the book. And you know, the character gets to speak for himself or herself. That's a pretty cool thing to put in a blog.
Yeah. That is a great idea. That's really good.
Yeah. So, Beam, you want to roll a commercial or two? Why don't we knock out two of them because we haven't really played
right.
any.
Okay, dokie.
With good jobs so hard to find, especially in rapidly expanding Georgia, owning your own food truck could be the best option. It's the least expensive startup, and you can be fully operational in mere months. The rules and regulations can be a bit complex, and no single source has offered all the answers. Until now, how to start and run your own food truck business in Georgia by food truck veteran A.K. Wingler is the step-by-step guide that takes you from good idea to great success. Sure, it's hard work, but exciting, mobile, flexible, and highly profitable. And you get to be your own boss and set your own hours. Proudly published by Fresh Ink Group, this book tells you how and where to make money in this exploding independent industry. Learn more at Wingler's website, yourfoodtruckhowto.com. Grab your copy in laminated hardcover, glossy softcover, or any of the major ebook formats at retailers worldwide. Even if you're just curious for now, this guide is the best way to discover why a food truck business is right for you. Discover Practical Problems, 10 Stories for the Stage by Jay Ejlouni. In Goin' Legit, mobsters seek a conventional bank loan with hilarious results. In The Angry Ashtray, an inanimate object comes to life and has a surprising view about familiarity. In Blues Man Brando, actor Marlon Brando pays a surprising and surreal visit to a suburban family. In Up From the Ashes, a local historical society decides to turn back the clock, way back. In A Hard Way's Night, an aging rock band regroups to bid goodbye to the grungy ballroom where they got their start. And in The Three Christs of Ypsilanti, based entirely upon a true story, three psychotics attempt to convince a psychologist they are each the Son of God. There are four more stories too delicious to summarize by Jay Ejlouni and published proudly by Fresh Ink Group in soft, hard, and all digital formats. Practical Problems delivers what it promises.
Yeah, since we started working on that food truck series, I've gotten kind of excited about food trucks. Whenever I spot one somewhere, I have to stop and check it out. And, of course, we're taking pictures now, too. And everybody out there, we'd appreciate it if you do that. You see a cool-looking food truck, take some pictures and send them to us or go to yourownfoodtruckhowto.com, a.k.a. Wingler's website, and she's got a place there that you can upload them. It'd be very cool. But like last night, I went to Ryman Auditorium in Nashville, which is Ryman's one block off of Broadway. Broadway is the party street. It's like Bourbon Street in New Orleans is. And every corner there, everywhere you look, vacant lots behind buildings tucked into the edge of an alley, food trucks. And every one of those food trucks had long lines, people waiting at them. And it's like, man, that's it's definitely an attractive business idea. So if you're interested, check out those books.
Yeah. All right. So we had a caller, but... No, we had a caller, but the caller dropped. Caller, if you're still listening, call back.
Yeah,
we're just
call
about
back.
To go to you. All right. So, Linda, you live in Texas. Are you originally from Texas? Is this where you were born and raised?
Yes. We lived, I was born in Kilgore in East Texas. Lived there all my life until Caleb and I married. And then we've lived a little bit of everywhere. Spent 10 years in Alabama, so I still have a little bit of Alabama in my talk. But
where in Alabama?
Lived in Birmingham.
Okay.
One of the phrases that you would hear down there is, go ahead on.
Go ahead on.
And it's kind of like in Texas, we say, I'm fixing to do something. But we were talking about characters and working with other people. When I did Harry Thurgood out of C.W. Hawes' book, I claimed he was the most handsome man in town. Harry, C.W. said I didn't really envision him like that.
Well, that's an interesting concept that you're writing with other people's characters is that you see them through a whole different prism than what the creator of that character
prism.
Does.
Exactly. Richard Schwint lives up in Canada, and his main character is he teaches psychology at the university there, Burnett College in Magnolia Bluff. And I don't know Richard except on the Zoom and via email, but I thought of his character as being a very kind and caring person. And he is in a dilemma in Richard's book because all of the young ladies that he is counseling are being murdered. So he has a little bit of a problem there. And then we have Charles Brightfield and Roxanne Berkey's book, Rox Berkey. They have two little ladies who own bed and breakfast, and the women in the town are working with them, and they're trying to do a podcast, and things keep interfering with their podcast. And so finally a couple comes to stay in their bed and breakfast, and he just happens to be an expert at technology, so they can get their podcast going. Charles and Rox are technology people, and that fits with their own profession, and so they knew that's what they know. They wrote the Enigma series, which is a techno thriller type story. You
very
may
popular.
Have had them before. Yeah, very, very popular.
Yeah, we're trying to get Rox to come on the show.
Yeah, we've sent out the
will be wonderful.
We
sent
out the invitation.
Your audience will really love her.
We've got another caller. You want to take this call?
Go.
Good. All right. This is going to be area code 520. Hello, caller. You are on the air. What's your name and where are you calling from?
Hi, this is Jink Schwartz. I just heard my name and thought I would call in and congratulate.
Issue a blanket denial, huh?
Get her book out. And I do promise not to kill off at least her main character.
Thank you. Because I don't like my main character.
I have the advantage of December.
Yeah. Just if you kill them, let me know. So somebody, Jinx, you're the one who sent out the email today wanting to know who we had, whom we had murdered. So you wouldn't re-murder them, I think.
It's something like
re-murder.
That. Re-murder. Or maybe I'd re-murder them, yeah. Anyway, I just wanted to say I'm listening and I'm enjoying the podcast.
Well, thank you,
Jake. Thanks for calling in, Jake.
I've had a coffee book. They're wonderful.
Thank you for the plug.
I like those emails going back and forth where you're comparing notes of who got murdered. Somebody accidentally sends one of those to the FBI and bam, bam, bam.
Oh, you know, and I killed the veterinarian and an attorney, and one of the underground authors wrote back, yay, one less attorney.
Yeah. That's the old joke. What do you call a dead attorney? A good start.
Right. And my daughter-in-law is an attorney, so I'm very careful.
We love attorneys.
Oh, I worked for attorneys for years. In Alabama.
All right. In Alabama.
Anyway, that's all I had to say. I'm going to listen on online. So you guys have a great evening.
Yeah,
and
we appreciate you listening to future podcasts, too. Maybe call in with a different guest another time.
Yeah.
All right.
All right.
So we'll talk to y'all later.
Thanks.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Right, we do have another one as well. You want to take this other call?
Let's go.
Yeah.
All right. This is area code 613. Welcome to the show. You're on the air. What's your name and where are you calling from?
My name is Richard Schwint, and I am thrilled to hear Linda talking tonight about her book. I'm really excited about it.
Well, welcome
to
the show, Richard.
Yeah.
So, Linda, I do have a question.
Okay.
You and I had a little exchange about you killing the vet as one of my character's dogs today. But I did want to ask you. Something I'm curious about is what you think the thematic thread, between all our books is. Because, like you say, it's like herding cats. We're all very different in terms of how we write. So what would you say holds us all together?
You know, I think we just have a love and an appreciation of each other and the different genres that we've all written in previous to this particular project. As far as the thread going through this town, it's a small town. Everybody knows everybody else. There's some people you love better than others, which is real life. There are people who have some problems. In fact, you know that Dr. Michael Kure, like your character, really helped Caroline, my character, work through her grief process over her husband. So it's that caring interaction, I think, between the characters that really makes this work. They all meet at the coffee shop in the mornings. They share ideas with each other. One character, the hairdresser, knows everything about everybody. It's kind of like the bartender, but she's very discreet. She never repeats. In fact, she doesn't very often frequent the coffee shop because she is. So let me ask you that question. Richard, what do you think is the theme throughout?
Yeah, well, I have a strong sense of place. And even though I've never set foot in Texas, I do have a strong sense of Magnolia Bluff. And I think we all do in our own way. And we start to interact, as you said earlier in the podcast. And I think you know from my book that Mike has quite a crush on Carolyn. And I don't know if that's going to go anywhere, but the fact that these things are going to start organically within our series is going to be pretty remarkable.
Yeah. And, you know, my character, Caroline, has been infatuated with a couple of characters that I've already introduced, but they wear a uniform. And she has vowed never to become involved with another person in uniform who could put his life in danger. She has a very high regard for Professor Kurley. So, you know, who knows where that's going to go. So,
yeah, and that's the beauty of our series.
A little bit of romance, huh? You think?
That is the beauty of our series, is that these sort of things are going to happen, and they're not predictable. You know, they're going to just happen because all nine of us are going to create unique characters.
That's correct. And, you know, I'm not a panther. I'm a plotter. And I've always outlined everything.
Yay. Good for you. Yeah.
I keep a notebook with all my research and everything. I even have pictures. I go online and I've got a picture that I think is going to be Caroline's house or where Dr. Kurlick would live. That way I can put them in that place and with a lot of description when I get to that scene. But, you know, and I hope Caleb has hung up by now because he always tells me I'm too anal, OCD, about my characters. And I always
you
tell
can't
him,
be.
You created them. You should be able to control them.
Yeah, it's power.
But,
have all the power.
But, you know, about halfway through the Dewey Decimal System, I just let them go. I quit outlining. He doesn't know that.
Yeah.
Richard, are you still there?
Oh, yeah. It's.
Do you outline or do you just write?
Very little. I'm a pantser, and although I do have to keep an eye on, especially with mysteries, you've always got to keep an eye on plot lines because they can get away from you and you can have big gaps. I was a little more careful with this one than a lot of my other books, but no, I'm not a big plotter, to be honest.
Well, actually, and I'm not saying this just because you're on the line. I've already mentioned this to Caleb. You are the closest author to literary fiction that we have in our group.
Oh, high praise.
Well, that's a high compliment.
Yeah.
Thank you for saying
that. I'm really enjoying your book. I really am.
Cool.
So having said that, I'm looking forward to your next book.
Yeah.
Well, I've just gotten the start. It, you know, as you know today, Linda, we were all exchanging who we've killed and who we're saving. And that forced me to think a lot more. I'm about a chapter or two in. And I think all of us are now thinking about multiple complex plot lines from all the books. And a couple of them we haven't mm-hmm. seen yet. And what we're going to do in our next book. Because I know certainly people like CW and Caleb are going to be well ahead of the pack in that. So we all have to think about something kind of funny happened with a friend who I told about this, and he said, do you have a continuity coordinator? And I said to him, are you kidding with this group? We're all just like you said, moving cats. It's not going to happen.
Yeah.
And you know, our next round is probably going to be more challenging in some ways, although more rewarding than our first round.
It will be. And, you know, I sent that page out, and I hope you printed it with the new characters that I'm introducing. And today I received, or yesterday, I've forgotten which day, I received CW's new characters. And I have no idea what he's going to do with those characters, and I don't think he does at this point in time. But, you know, I was telling someone this past week that when I go to the grocery store, I always watch what other people have in their baskets, because based upon what they buy, you can tell whether or not they live alone or they have a large family, whether they're just buying food in bulk to feed that large family, or whether or not they're health conscious and buying healthy foods. It just helps me develop the persona for some of my characters.
Hmm.
Well, Linda, it also begs the question, how much of you is Carolyn McCluskey?
Woo!
Da-da-da!
Dun-da-dun-dun. maybe not so much as Lillian Prestridge in my first series.
You heard it here, folks.
Lillian Prestridge is a retired educator. Caroline would be, I guess, the person who would be the younger Linda Purtle.
Okay. Well, anyway, I'm going to go back on to Twitter, but thanks for letting me chatter away here. I'm really, really enjoying your book, Linda, and really looking forward to the rest of the podcast. Take care.
Yeah. Well, thank you.
Thanks for calling,
thank
Richard.
Thank you for calling, Richard.
Yeah, thanks, Richard.
Okay,
bye. Yeah, Linda, one thing that really strikes me as potentially fun about this is the variances in description. Back in the day when I used to teach story writing classes, when I'd get to description, I would kind of make up a little story right there on the spot and just tell it to the class and then start asking them questions. What did he see out the window? Things like that. And help. And they would discover then that if you don't do a good job with description, you leave blanks and you leave holes, the readers will fill them in. And they're going to fill them in with their own default assumptions, what they pictured when you described that person but didn't give enough description to show what it really looked like.
That's correct.
You wind up with that, with all those variations and like that. And it sounds like with your group, you would get a little bit of that kind of stuff. Everybody's interpretations or expectations or even what they're thinking of your characters and how you're seeing them would vary from person to person. And would just be fun, adding all that flavor in there and, you know, telling people, you know, well, that's really not what my character was supposed to be, but let's work with that, you know, or whatever. I just like that. Now, I have a question before we we got a question on Twitter from Joe Condrell too, but mine is, when you're working with a group like that, you spoke highly of these people and, you know, you humbly said that these people are in a league that's up there and that you'd like to be in. What have you learned from working with all of them and doing this kind of a project? What's different about it for you, and what stands out that's cool about it, you know, that taught you how to be a better writer?
Well, you know, just reading their work helps.
Yeah.
And I'd have to really think about that, because there's so many things that I've learned just from working with them. I think I can do the elaboration. I'm not sure that I've always been really good at getting the senses in, the five senses.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a big one, point of view.
And humor is hard to write.
It is.
I know Jink Schwartz can put humor in there, and it just flows beautifully. So I've tried to read books by other authors in the genres that we've got and kind of see how they handle certain things. But I really just have the sentence structure from each of them. The syntax is so different. Richard uses a lot of words in the psychology profession. I've learned a lot about ships and yachts reading Jink Schwartz books. Her Head of Coffee series, and I'll give her another plug on that because they are just delightful books. You've got to get her on the show. I've learned about technology and, you know, the personalities of the people who work in those different areas. I don't know all about C.W. Hall's ground and what he does, but he's got a group of women in his book that are just they're real snippy, and I've with each other. So I've learned, you know, I've always just let people talk. I don't in real life, sarcasm doesn't bother me, but I've noticed that some of his characters don't like sarcasm, but they're really good at it. So it's okay when they're dishing it out. And I made the comment recently, he really knows how women think. You know? Uh-huh. Yes. He portrays them so well. And I think that that has helped me just reading their stories and how their characters interact with each other. That's helped me develop mine and develop the interaction with them.
Isn't that great?
And you know, I live with a writer, with Caleb. And we
admire you for that.
Well, it, you know, one time we were sitting at the breakfast table and he said something. Our son had asked him a question. Our little son was about 4 years old. And when Caleb answered him, he looked at me and frowned, like, what's he talking about? And I said, son, you need to learn early on in life that you and I live in one world. But your father lives in another one.
Yeah.
And because Caleb was so caught up with what he was writing, he really didn't hear the question that his son was asking him.
Mm.
So we had to reel him back in. But I do think that whatever character you develop, you put a little bit of yourself in that character.
Cool.
Okay, we're going to jump over to Twitter because Joe Conjul had asked a question here a little while ago. He says, Linda, how did the group decide the order of each author's book? Did you do something like draw names out of a hat, and whatever number you chose was when your book would debut?
That's a good question. CW and Caleb are Panzers. They had been talking about doing this, so they were early. Cindy Davis writes really quickly. I knew it'd take me a whole year to get mine in, so I chose later in the year. And some of our authors are still working and full-time jobs. And so they pretty much had the later. And Jinx came in late. We didn't have anyone for December, and she came in. Kelly, I got confused, and I was putting Kelly in front of me, and she nearly had a heart attack. No. Her book is coming out in November. She needed that extra month to work on her book, so that took a lot of pressure off of her. But we just kind of volunteered. And so today I was emailing back and forth with CW, and he had chosen January of 2023, and I think he's going to give up that month and switch to October because I had October. So
I'm trying to get mine ready so that we can start the year off with an additional sequel to the stories. So I don't know if I'll make it. It may be February before I get it out.
Well, now that you're an established author and you've got some titles under your belt, do you have any advice to young up-and-coming authors or older people who are just discovering that, hey, I want to be a writer too later in life?
Well, I do. I know a lot of older people who have excellent, wonderful stories. They'll just sort of, you know, they can entertain you for hours talking about the past. And we don't have very many World War II people left, but there are some who are part of the Vietnam War. A lot of them have lived through a lot of changes in our country, and they've just had so many experiences. I really encourage them to write those stories. It goes back to what I was saying earlier. Something in your life made you who you are today. Write that for the next generation. We're just one generation away from being forgotten. And I think
yeah.
that same suggestion works with younger people too, because they are learning every day. I had my grandson ask me one time, Mimi, what do you think the world will be like when I grow up? That's an in-depth question for an 11-year-old child.
Yeah.
So, you know, I had to say something positive that, you know, just look at the telephone. When I was a kid and we first got a telephone, we were on a party line. Well, what's a party line? So I had to tell him about that. Not everybody had these little phones that you could carry around. And they have no idea of the progress, but they have no idea how much progress will occur in their lifetimes. We don't either. But you just have to be ready for change. Get ready for it, because it's going to happen. And some of it's going to be really good and very productive and help mankind, and some of it won't. And you will have to decide for yourself what is good and what is bad. I told him about my mother, who was born in 1900. They didn't have cars. Not everybody had a car. And that's just really hard for a child to realize and to understand. So the young people today need to write about what's happening. And they can keep this in mind. What you're writing, how will the next generation react to it? Use language that's also indicative of this era in time, but also don't use so many cliches that they won't understand what you're talking about.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
I know I was reading Nancy Drew, some of the original stories to my grandson, and he kept stopping me. Well, what does that mean? And what does that mean?
Yeah.
You know, the language. Be careful of the language that you use. Don't use all slang. If you use a slang, put a trigger comma there and kind of explain what it is. To the next generation, because everything is so different. The vocabulary is changing. But mainly write what you know about. And I used my first book as an example. We lived in a gated community. The action takes place in a gated community. If you go to and you want to write about your school experiences, put the character in the proper setting so that you can really describe the building, the classrooms, build a picture for your reader. Pretend that you are a camera, and when you walk into the room, let the reader know what you see.
Wow.
And don't be afraid to use your imagination.
And get all those senses in there, Linda.
Get all those senses in there.
Get all of them in there.
I used a line and told my students, finish the story. And the line went something like this. He stormed out of the screen door He stormed out of the door. The screen slammed behind him. He got on his motorcycle and they had to finish. And they had to get sound, you know, what he saw. And why did he storm out of there? What had happened to make him so anxious to get on that motorcycle and ride away?
One thing I keep noticing about young people too is there's a lot of creativity out there, a lot of creativity
there
in the
is.
Next generation, but I see a lot of them channeling it toward social media. You know, putting posts out mm-hmm. there, putting videos on TikTok and things like that. But that stuff's ephemeral. They need to, you know, maybe think about writing something that's going to endure, something that their own children will read someday or their own grandchildren will read or somebody will read after they're gone. And I think another thing that I noticed, too, is that when they're creating content, it seems to be all about getting those likes, doing something
yeah.
that people like and approve of. But I think of, you know, like one of my favorite writers, A.M. Holmes, put out the book The End of Alice, and a lot of people hate that book, despise that
yeah.
book, because she wasn't trying to write a book for likes. She was writing a book that was telling an intense story, whether you liked what was happening in it or not. And I think that's something a lot of people, young people, really need to start transitioning toward as well. You know, it isn't about being popular. It's about having something to say, even if people don't want to hear it.
No, they don't. But always speak the truth.
Yeah, always.
Always. The only time I told my students to lie, they had to learn how to write a persuasive essay. And there are special techniques that you use if you're trying to convince others. And these kids didn't have any facts whatsoever. They were given a topic on the state exams. And so if they used all of those tactics, then they could just make up facts. And I said, just pretend you're a politician and write the essay. Make up your statistics. It's just really judging how creative you can be. But you're right, they are very creative, and a lot of the students that I had kept notebooks. There are a lot of young poets, and I'm so sorry, poetry doesn't sell the way it should.
Yeah.
But they can really get a lot of emotion in the poems that they write.
Yeah, I've read some incredible poetry. One of our guests coming up, Harmony Kent, she does more, like I told her, she does more with a couple of lines, a handful of words, than a lot of people can do with a whole chapter in a book.
I had a student one time who was from Mexico, and his writing, you know, their syntax is so different from ours, but he really was a poet. But he kept failing the writing. And I said, just switch all of this around. Write it the way you're going to write it. And I gave him a topic. And I said, now let's turn these words around and make them really boring, and you'll pass that exam.
Okay.
And so that's what he did, and he passed. But I really hated to do that to him because he was, at heart, a poet.
Wow. Linda, we're running out of time. It's been a thrill having you on here. We were really
I've
looking forward
it.
To this. And, hey, double bonus. We got a phone call from Caleb in there as well.
Yeah. How about that?
So how do people find you?
He's a pretty nice
person. Yeah,
okay,
we get that impression.
Yeah.
Your social media handles, websites, blogs, anything out there that you want to promote, let us help people find you.
Okay, if you really want to, I'm on Amazon. You can just plug in Linda Pirtle Books and they'll come up. I really would like to receive emails. I very rarely get on Facebook. I am on Facebook and I am on Twitter, but it might be days before I get to you if you send me anything via that. So my email address is lsgp2019@yahoo.com, and that would be the quickest way to get in touch with me. And I'll be happy to hear from anyone who wants to know about my books.
Yeah, cool.
Well, and of course, Caleb and I have our website. It's CalebandLindaPirtle.com.
Yeah, it's a very nice website, too. I encourage everybody to go over there and visit that.
Yeah, we promote a lot of other writers, a lot of other authors, mostly indie authors on there, and that's how we've met a lot of other authors, via our web page. Cool. We love to hear from everyone.
Now,
I really have enjoyed being on your program.
Before we wrap this, Robert G. Williscroft, he posted a comment on here. He's got a couple of comments here, but the one that's jumping out is, you had talked about the World War II veterans are fading, and Stephen and I actually talked about that this evening during one of our Zoom or Skype meetings. But you had talked about getting them to write their stories. Robert G. Williscroft points out that's how Submariner came about. He got Jerry Pink to write his stories down and put them in a book form so that they're not lost.
That is good. That is a good thing to do. And I love that comment. One of the students that I taught, I've taught a 6-week period of war literature. And one of the boys, their assignment, outside assignment, was to find someone who either had fought in the World War II, Korean War, or Vietnam War. And his dad had fought in the Vietnam War, and he said, because I had this assignment, my daddy pulled out pictures and showed me pictures and actually talked to me. He'd never talked to me about it before.
Wow.
So I was, you know, that was just an assignment that I made, but it really bonded that son with his father. So we need to hear those stories. We need that history so we don't repeat it.
Yeah, indeed.
You want to pick up Williscroft's quote there?
Yeah. Williscroft also said, this is a quote, "No single thing abides, but all things flow. Fragment to fragment clings until things grow, until we know and name them. Then by degrees they change and are no more the things we know." Lucretius Carus Manus, 41 BC.
That's pretty cool.
I bet you Robert knew him personally.
Yeah, probably. They probably subbed together. But wrapping up, Verwaine Greenhost says a big thank you to author Linda Pirtle for taking the time to talk to Voice Indie hosts Stephen Gies and Beam Weeks. I always enjoy my Wednesday nights with my writing community. And Joe Congel also says, great show tonight. Thanks at Linda Pirtle. Loved hearing about your writing. So thanks for participating in the show tonight, guys. Now, next week, we've got a pre-recorded show because we're going to be on the road. Harmony Kent, who Beam was talking about earlier. She's a good friend of ours. We've known her for many, many years. She's over in England and in Cornwall, actually. And she's just a lot of fun to talk to. She calls herself an amputee with a wicked sense of humor, and she is both, absolutely both. And we recorded that show last week. So that'll be next week's show. And then who got after that, Beam?
And she sounds a lot like Sharon Osbourne, Ozzy's wife.
Yes, she does.
After Harmony, we've got Jan Sykes. That's a return visit.
Now, where is Jan? She's in Texas, isn't she?
Jan's in Texas as well. She's a Texas author.
Yeah.
In fact, I'll see her this weekend.
Yeah,
all
cool.
Right.
Now, the week after that, we've got another Texas author, Fresh Ink Group member, Marcia Fox. And she's going to be celebrating Native American History Month and talking about the release of the new book that she co-wrote with Chief Pete Rising Sun. So that'll be Marcia Fox and Chief Pete Rising Sun the week after Jan Sykes.
And after that, we've got California author and bestseller, USA Today bestseller, Avante Sendre joining us. We don't know a whole lot about her, but we are looking forward to having her on.
And then very popular author and Story Empire member, Tracy Troilo. She'll be on. And after that,
we've got Linda Mims. She's a longtime friend of Stephen and I. And finally wrangled her into a date for the show. So,
Now, we got two dates in December filled in. Now we're going to have Tom Stewart on December 7th. We don't know him very well yet. We're just starting to learn more about him. but we've been impressed, so we're going to have him on. And then what's happening right before Christmas, Beam?
And right before Christmas, the guys from Wide Track, Ron and Zach Tippin, will be in. They've got a new album that they've been working on, and Zach has started college, so that's kind of slowed down the progress. I caught a progress report from Ron yesterday. It's kind of slowed down the progress on mixing the album. It's recorded. They just got to mix it, but this may be finished by the time we get him on in December, and maybe we can play a few tracks off of that new album.
Darn kids, and they're getting education all the time.
Getting
Sometimes
education.
It's inconvenient. But anyway, we got a great slate of guests coming up. Linda Pirtle, it's kind of hard to follow an act like that, but we are going to have some good shows. And again, thanks for being on the show tonight, Linda. We've been thrilled
thank
to have you.
Linda.
And we encourage everybody to
so
get out there.
Thank you for having me. I've truly
enjoyed
it.
Find those Linda Pirtle books. And after you have read everything Linda Pirtle has written and the underground authors, then Caleb Pirtle III. He's got some books too. So thanks, everybody. We'll see you next
everyone.
Time.
Next week.
Bye-bye. Sure. Thank you. Bye-bye. Have a
bye.
Good week.
You've been a part of Voice of Indy, a production of Fresh Ink Group. Spread the word, support our guests, then find us at freshinkgroup.com and be sure to hashtag Fresh Ink Group.